I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. The numbers are troubling. Last week, 861,000 Americans applied for unemployment, a sign that the pandemic economy is still in trouble. In January, just 49,000 new jobs were added to the national economy. The ice and snowstorms this month are going to have an impact on whether some businesses can stay open or have to shut down. According to the Associated Press, more than 18 million Americans are getting some form of unemployment aid from the states and the federal government. The Biden administration wants to increase the weekly federal unemployment checks from $300 to $400 as part of their $1.9 trillion stimulus package. Today, Radio Times, Unemployment and the Future of Work, part of our Friday, February series about how COVID has upended the world of work. And we have two guests who have joined us. Let me introduce them to you. Eliza Forsythe is an assistant professor at the University of Illinois in economics, labor, and employment relations. And Eliza Forsythe, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Nice to have you with us. And also with us is Julia Simon Michelle, supervising attorney at the Unemployment Compensation Unit at Philadelphia Legal Assistance. Julia Simon Michelle, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Wonderful to be back. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you with us. And I should say Julia is joining us by Skype. You can join us as well. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us 1-888-477-9499. We especially want to hear from you if you are struggling with employment or are unemployed at this moment. Let me begin with you, Eliza. And sometimes it's so confusing. I spout all these numbers here. I'm not exactly sure what they all mean. But when 861,000 people apply for unemployment, what does that tell us about the state of our economy today?
Well, it tells us that we've really stalled out in terms of the recovery. So it's not as bad as it was back in April, but it's historically still a very, very high number of people applying for unemployment insurance, which says that, you know, we still have a long way to go to get back to a recovery and back to normal times.
Is this to be expected in the middle of a winter, or do you think there's something really afoot here? I don't mean that's not significant, but something else that's afoot here.
Right. Yeah. So this is unprecedented even for winter time. So this is really, we're in this unusual pandemic situation where people continue to be out of work and to be newly unemployed and claiming new unemployment benefits.
And yet we read that the unemployment rate is 6.7%. I remember with the Great Recession, it was closer to 9-10%. What does that tell us?
So part of that is people's own behavior right now. So because of the pandemic, a lot of people aren't even looking for work. And there's lots of reasons for that. You know, lots of schools are remote, and so people have to be home to supervise their kids. Or, you know, if you have health concerns or other reasons why it's not safe to be going back to work. So we have a lot of people that aren't even counted as unemployed just because they're not on layoff and they're not searching for work. And so the unemployment rate is really missing a lot of the people that are hurting in the current economy.
What do you think is the more accurate rate of unemployment then? It's not 6.7. What do you think it is?
It's really hard to guess because we don't know for the people that have left employment and aren't searching, are they coming back or not? But there's probably, 4 or 5 million more people that we're not counting in the unemployment rate that are people that will come back once the pandemic is over and it's safe to return to employment.
And I do want to pick up on that. Julia, let me get you in on the conversation. Give us a snapshot of what's happening in Philadelphia based on the people contacting your office. How are people doing in this city?
Unfortunately, I can't say that they're doing any significantly better than they were at the beginning of the pandemic. While some jobs have come back and some people have stabilized in their claims for unemployment, many Philadelphians are still living on the brink. They have no personal safety net left, no cushion, and many have waited months and months and months for unemployment benefits, and some still haven't even received them. And so I completely agree that people are interested in going back to work. They want to go back to work, but they don't feel like it's safe. They don't feel like there are jobs out there they can safely do. And until those return, I think we're going to keep looking at this situation.
What does someone do if they don't have a job, so they don't have income coming in from that job, they're not getting unemployment, let's say they didn't get the stimulus check, what are they doing, Julia, to survive?
People are relying on the help of friends and family. People are relying on other forms of public benefits here in the city. There are organizations like Benefili, which help screen people for different types of benefits. But in reality, if they've applied for unemployment, they are fighting every day, calling every day, everyone they can, to try to get those benefits turned on, because they know that is the best way to put money in their pocket and food on the table.
Are they calling the state? Are they calling the city? They're calling the feds? They're calling everybody?
They are calling everyone. The state is still incredibly difficult to get through to. So we, of course, receive an astronomically high number of calls to our office, as do state representatives and senators. And of course, online communities have really grown in an effort to support workers trying to get through and trying to figure out what's going on with their unemployment, whether that's on Facebook, Instagram, or Reddit.
What's the problem with the state? Do they not have enough people, or what's going on there?
Being able to get through to the Department of Labor and Industry on the phone is not a new problem. It's one that has been around for many years, and while for some time it was better before the pandemic, it's now just nearly impossible because of the high number of people trying to get through and the number of people answering the phone. Now, remember, when somebody's answering the phone, they're not able to be processing someone's claim, right, or paying out someone else's benefits. And so there's a balance of how that works. But part of it is that there's a real failure in communication to workers about how these benefit programs work, what they're eligible for, what's happening with their claim. And if that communication was improved, less people would feel the need to call.
So literally the people wanting unemployment, their unemployment benefits, talk to a worker, and the worker doesn't necessarily or always know how the system works?
Absolutely. For many people during this pandemic, this is their first experience with the unemployment system, and especially for individuals on pandemic unemployment assistance who are historically excluded from unemployment benefits but were brought in by the CARES Act. This is all new to them. And so a basic understanding of how it functions is missing. But in general, our country and individual states has never done a good job of easily and simply explaining to people how these programs work, in part because they've become so complex over the last 20 years.
Elisa Forsythe, let me go back to you, because you've done some studies about who is getting unemployment benefits. These are people who are unemployed, and finding only that 1 in 4, so that's 25% of these people, are actually getting the benefits. Can you expand on that?
Right. So that 1 in 4 figure, that's about the people who are currently unemployed, what share of them are receiving benefits. And so there's a couple different things going on. One is just that to qualify for unemployment insurance, you have to have left a job recently. And so there's a huge group of people that maybe they just graduated and they're just entering the labor market. Maybe they spent some time out of the labor market and are coming back in. They're also affected by the fact that it's hard to find a job right now, but they don't qualify for any of these benefits. So some of the people we're counting as unemployed, they're not even, they wouldn't even qualify for unemployment insurance benefits. Now, on the other hand, there's also people that very likely should qualify for unemployment insurance benefits, but they didn't apply because they were unsure how to do it, or they thought that they wouldn't qualify. And so there's quite a lot of people that likely would qualify for benefits, but aren't even receiving them because it's so hard to get through to the state system, or they don't understand the roles and qualifications.
Is there any way to decomplicate that or streamline it or make it more user-friendly, Elisa?
It's really difficult. I mean, we're in a crisis situation right now for each state's unemployment insurance system. And so these are the kinds of investments that need to be made when we're not in a crisis. And so these are the types of investments that states need to make it easier for people to actually access the benefits that they qualify for. But there's also, as we were talking about, this PUA program that really dramatically expanded who qualifies for unemployment insurance. So typically, if you don't earn enough money or if you are an independent contractor, there's a lot of people that don't even qualify for UI, and now they do. But that brings a lot more people into the system, mm-hmm. and it's new roles, and the states need to figure out how to manage all of these new roles. And so, and then we have this whiplash with different policies. You know, we keep going from one policy to another when different benefits expire. And so it's really been a difficult situation for also for the states that are trying to administer these benefits.
And UI stands for unemployment insurance, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, just to make sure we're all on the same page. Julia, anything you want to add to what Eliza just said there?
I can't tell you the number of people who have come to us 6 months, 8 months into the pandemic, asking for the first time whether they're eligible for benefits. And people who are clearly eligible for benefits, even here in Pennsylvania on regular state, we'll say UI because that is the term across the country. But here in Pennsylvania, it's called unemployment compensation.
Okay.
So folks out there are confused. That's the difference. But it's all the same thing. And, you know, it's basic things like somebody went out on a leave of absence because they were high risk for COVID, but, you know, could be doing work from home, could work remotely if offered that. That person should be eligible for Pennsylvania unemployment compensation. But people just don't realize that, in part because the laws of different are different across each state about who qualifies. And the other part about this that I've really been worried about is the federal government and state governments have focused so much over the last decade on fraud. There are fraud warnings everywhere. That's constantly what you hear about in the news. And so many people tell me, well, I didn't want to apply. I was worried they would think it was fraud if I'm not eligible. They're all so scared of that, that they're losing out on the benefits they are eligible for. And while there are problems with fraud in the pandemic unemployment assistance system, we're talking about criminal conspiracy fraud. We are not talking about individuals who made a mistake. And I think that needs to be made really clear to the public so that people aren't afraid to apply for benefits that will be life-saving for them and their families.
Well, let's take a very short break. And then, Eliza, I want to pick up on that and talk to you about this issue of fraud or alleged fraud. We're talking about unemployment, the future of work, how the pandemic has upended the world of work. It's part of a Friday series we're doing this month. And this Friday, we're looking at people who are unemployed. We'll be talking about the future of work, where the jobs are, retraining, all those issues. And you can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call us. That number is 1-888-477-9499. Eliza Forsyth is an assistant professor at the University of Illinois in Economics, Labor, and Employment Relations. Julia Simon-Michel, supervising attorney at the Unemployment Compensation Unit at Philadelphia Legal Assistance. And we want to hear from you, and do stay with us. Much more after this short break.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with our guests about unemployment, the pandemic, and the future of work. Again, our guests are Eliza Forsyth and Julia Simon-Michel. Eliza, pick up, if you could, on what Julia was saying before the break about people being afraid of being accused of fraud for applying for unemployment benefits. And how big a problem do you think fraud is?
Right. So I absolutely agree with Julia that, you know, there's a difference between the fraud of individuals, you know, accidentally, you know, giving the wrong information, or, you know, the errors that can come just through trying to get through a complicated system, that's very different from what we've been seeing with the PUA fraud, which is really this criminal, these criminal actors that it's pretty large. But that's very different from the individuals that are claiming. This focus on fraud, I think, does definitely make people afraid to even try to apply for benefits.
And what did you call it? PWA fraud?
So that's the new program, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, that brought all these new people into the unemployment insurance system. And for those people, so typically your employer reports your wages, and so it's very easy for the state to know what you earned and what you should get from the unemployment insurance. But from this new program, if you're self-employed, you're kind of providing your own documentation. And so it's administratively a much more difficult program to administer, and also much more easy for people to criminally try to get fraudulent benefits.
Julia, here's an email from Dick who says, what do the guests make of the view that favorable unemployment benefits discourage people from seeking employment? And that certainly has been out there. Julia, what do you make of that?
So I'll let Eliza handle this on the econ side, because I think there's been some really good research that kind of knocks that theory down. But I can speak on personal experience, especially. For years and years and years working in unemployment, one of the very first questions that I get asked by clients who used to physically come through my door is, can you get me my job back? People want to work. Work itself is fulfilling. And while work alone doesn't give you a sense of dignity, because there's all sorts of questions about low wages and how that impacts people's life, people want to be working, especially because they don't trust that the unemployment system is going to continue to function for them and that their benefits aren't going to get cut off. And so I can say we have not seen this at all in practice, or heard from our clients that they are happy to just sit back and collect unemployment and not work. They want to be working, but they want to work in a safe environment that respects them.
Eliza, can you expand on that?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. So if, you know, we've had this whiplash of extra benefits are here for a few months and then they go away and they come back. And so if you're trying to count on getting these unemployment insurance benefits, you don't really know how long they're going to be around for. And so it's really, if you're making that decision, should I go back to work and I'll have a job permanently versus, you know, just being on unemployment insurance, that's not really a good calculation, right? It's better to get back to a real job that you can count on for many months and years. And the evidence so far, there doesn't seem to be any good evidence that it's these extra benefits had led people not to go back to work. It's really the fact that we're in a pandemic. Work is not safe for a lot of people. Kids are out of school, that kind of thing that's really been driving what's going on right now.
Eliza, though, one of the things we learned, this was more from last spring when those checks started going out, is that for some people, they were actually making more money from unemployment than they were making for employment, which at least to me raises questions about low wage work, you know, the minimum wage, whether that should be raised. Can you speak to that?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So when we started getting those $600 a week extra unemployment insurance benefits for people that were in the bottom part of the wage distribution, so for low wage workers, that really, really increased their take home pay. And so what it actually ended up doing is for that period of time, those extra benefits equalized income inequality in the U.S. to a bit. So it kind of cut back against how unequal earnings are. But then obviously those went away. And so for a lot of people, we heard about how finally that they could kind of catch up on debt or have a little bit of savings and have a little bit of breathing room. And so despite all of the hardship from the pandemic and losing your job and everything that went along with it, sort of paradoxically, for some people, this actually allowed them to have a little bit more of a buffer and a little bit more of a safety net.
Let me read an email from Veronica. Julie, I'll put this to you. She says, I'm a West Philadelphia resident, have been unemployed since March 2020 due to the pandemic. I eventually started receiving benefits in July 2020, but now I have yet to receive my unemployment benefits in 2021. I've not been able to get through to the unemployment office as to why, which speaks to what you were saying earlier about just the difficulty of trying to make the system work.
Definitely. I've been saying for many months now that for many people, trying to seek unemployment is ending up in some sort of black hole where they just don't know where to turn and they don't know why their benefits have been cut off. And there were certainly a lot of problems in January with benefits because of the new CARES extension package that was passed at the end of December, but that wasn't enacted until after programs had been shut down. And so there were a lot of issues with people rolling off of benefit programs and the state needing to put them back on. And so I would recommend to her and anyone that is still trying to figure out what's going on to contact their state representative or state senator or to call our intake at 215-981-3800.
And here's a related email. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if I could just comment on the last piece. I think what people often don't understand in this country is how low regular unemployment benefits truly are. In Pennsylvania, there are at least 30,000 people receiving less than $100 per week for regular unemployment. And in many other states, they could be receiving $50 or $40. And some places, the highest rate is in the 200s. So unemployment benefits themselves are not livable income for the vast majority of people. And when that $600 came, what it also allowed people to do was survive once it ended for a period of time. But unfortunately now we are way past that. And the months in the fall where people did not have that, leading into the January kind of freeze on benefits before they restarted, has put people in a really big hole.
Eliza, I want to pick up on something that you referenced at the top of the hour, and this connection between our economy and the pandemic. We are seeing in fits and starts, but we're beginning to see this more streamlined rollout of vaccines. More people are getting vaccinated. Do you have some reason for hope, looking at least into the near future, that with more people vaccinated, we can get at least parts of our economy back to work again?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think that a lot of what we're seeing with the continued recession and the continued unemployment and people out of work, a lot of this is really about the virus. And so once we get the virus under control, then we will start to see people, you know, being willing to go out, being willing to go back to restaurants and things like that, which will sort of help start the economy to pick back up again. But it's really, you know, it's sort of unprecedented because we haven't had these pandemic events in recent history. And so it's hard to predict exactly how that interplay between people feeling comfortable and safe being out in public, right? When that will happen and when that will allow the economy to rebound.
I probably should have asked this near the top of the hour. Eliza, I'll go back to you. But when we talk about people who are unemployed, what kinds of jobs are we talking about?
Right. So the biggest losses were really people that were in leisure and hospitality industries, occupations like working at restaurants, personal care, service type occupations. And so while we saw job loss across the board, it was really concentrated in these types of jobs that require a lot of very close interaction with other people and restaurants and things like that, which have been subject to shutdowns or different regulations to help prevent the spread of the virus. And so that's also led to a lot of this inequality that we've been talking about, because the people that disproportionately lost their jobs were people that were already low earning jobs and people with disadvantaged backgrounds.
We are talking about unemployment, the pandemic, the future of work. That's Eliza Forsyth, assistant professor at the University of Illinois in economics, labor, and employment relations. Also with us, Julia Simon-Michel. She's supervising attorney at the Unemployment Compensation Unit at Philadelphia Legal Assistance. I want to read a email from Catherine, and then we'll get Ben on line two to join us. Catherine says, and I'll just read this, I think it's underscoring, Julia, what you're saying. The application process is very, very daunting and includes a sentence, "Do not call us." How hateful is that? This is a time when the system needs to be beefed up to help more people. In the past, I think people went to public libraries for assistance, and now the libraries are not available. Let me get Ben to join us. Ben calling us on, looks like, on line two. Ben, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks so much for covering this. This is just such a great topic, and again, another in a line of great things Radio Times has done. I'm on a little bit the flip side of the fraud situation, where I got a 1099-G saying that I had received like $11,600 a couple of weeks ago. I am retired, never applied for pandemic unemployment insurance. And I'm just so infuriated that people are taking it. People are able to take advantage of this system, steal money, and then people who really deserve it are not able to get have to go through so many hoops to get the money. And one more comment is just that when you call the fraud hotline, the answering machine literally says, "Don't leave a message because we won't get back to you for months." So hotline is so not the right term.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah, no, I appreciate Ben. Julia, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I completely agree with him. And part of the problem is that these, what we kind of call conspiracy, you know, fraud, the criminal fraud that's happening, is in part due to the fact that there have been so many major security breaches at major companies over the last few years that has led to significant identity theft. And so when this is happening to people, it's because somebody has their social security number and their personal information. And so if somebody is receiving a 1099 or documents in the mail about benefits they didn't apply for and didn't receive, they should check their credit report. They should consider putting a freeze on their social security number. And it's frustrating that the government's not responding when you report it because that's what they ask you to do. But just for Ben and others out there, what we have been told by the Department of Labor and Industry is that if you report it, they will shut down the claim and they will reissue at some point a 1099-G that is revised that shows you are not liable for that income and that folks should go ahead and apply for their taxes as if they didn't receive that 1099, as if they didn't have that income, because the government is going to fix it and issue a revised version for their records.
I appreciate that. Complicated, right, Julia? Jeez.
Everything
is. Eliza, let me go back to you. And one of the things that I've learned covering this pandemic is that the recovery is described as K-shaped. So if you think of the letter K, you've got an upright, you've got a vertical, then you've got one part of the K going down. Those are the people I think you were talking about earlier who really are struggling under this economy. And you've got the other part of the letter that's going up. And these are people who are working at home. They have white-collar jobs. They might even have saved a lot of money. They might even be doing better under this economy. Can you speak to them?
Right. So, so we have recovered quite a bit since April. So even the people that are in these, lower income jobs that were more likely to have lost their jobs, many of those jobs have come back. So I don't know if K is necessarily the right shape for describing what's happening on the bottom end. But that said, a lot of people that are higher income were much less likely to have lost their job. And then, you're not traveling, you're not eating out as much. So you may have built up some more savings. And then the stock market's been doing well. And so your investments are doing well. And that's what people really mean by the K-shape, is that, for people that are in these service sector type jobs that have lost work, or maybe they've come back and then things have shut down again. And so they're bouncing back and forth. The recovery has been very uneven for those workers and those individuals versus other people that haven't had that kind of risk and uncertainty. Their income and their savings are actually looking relatively good right now.
Since we are a consumer economy, we depend, I think, something like 70% of the economy is based on people spending their money. Looking at this group of people, Eliza, can we say that they have pent-up spending needs or desires, and that could help fuel the economy going forward?
Right. I really hope that that's what's going to happen. And I think there's a good chance that that is. So, you know, people, when you have extra money in your pocket and once it's safe to do so, you're going to want to, you know, travel and go out to restaurants and bars and do all of the sort of social activities that we like to do when it's safe and when we have extra money. And so I do think that as things become safe again, as the pandemic gets under control, we will have a lot of people kind of coming back to these this type of spending. And that can really help pull the economy quickly back into growth and out of this recession.
Do you think, though, looking into your crystal ball, that the pandemic is going to permanently reshape our economy?
It's really hard to know. A lot of the job loss has been in these service sector, restaurant, personal care type jobs. I don't see that being really dramatically changed by technology or, you know, restructuring how these jobs work. You really, you know, if you're at a restaurant, you need a person to cook your food and bring you your food, and hair salon, you need a person to cut your hair. So I think that a lot of those jobs will come back, but certainly plenty of businesses have gone under, right? And so it's going to require new businesses to come in and fill those voids, or other businesses to grow. So it could take some time for the jobs to come back like we had before.
And Julia, there's a lot of talk about, you know, retraining people, trying to better fit, I guess, people's skills and talents with the jobs that are available. How workable is that, do you think?
Well, first, I think we need to push back against this idea that it's a lack of skill or unmatching skills that is part of the problem with people not finding work. I think, as Eliza has said, it's really a demand issue more than anything else. And that, I think, has also come out of research from the Great Recession and looking at what actually happened with folks finding jobs again as the recession came to a conclusion. To the extent we want to engage in retraining, I think that can be important and helpful for certain workers, but retraining is not as helpful as it could be unless there is a direct entry point to a job. So if retraining is done as part of something like a subsidized jobs program, right, where there's a direct entryway into that new field and a supported job, that is can be incredibly helpful, especially if there are wraparound services provided that help that individual succeed at that job. But often retraining on its own, I think, is used as a talking point when it doesn't really address the underlying issue, which is that there's just not demand out there feeding the economy and creating jobs.
Well, we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. That's Julia Simon-Michel, Eliza Forsyth. We're talking about unemployment, the pandemic, and the future of work. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We're talking about unemployment, the pandemic, and the future of work. This is part of our Friday of February series about how COVID has upended the world of work. And again, talking with Eliza Forsyth from the University of Illinois and Julia Simon-Michel from the Philadelphia Legal Assistance. Joining us now is Brian Owen. He was a lifelong guide at Independence National Historical Park, right near WHYY in Philadelphia. And Brian Owen, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well.
You're doing well. Well, let me ask you a couple of questions because I want our listeners to know what you have been going through. You had been working for the park for how many years?
Well, I started being a tour guide on a national park for roughly since 95.
Wow.
So you can do the math.
I'll do the math, yeah.
Years. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And when were you laid off?
Well, I'm a subcontractor, so it's not actually being laid off. As a freelance tour guide and a subcontractor, I work for several companies for large tours, bus tours, all types of vehicles, and as a walk-in concierge for the hotels.
Right. So when did you lose your work?
I will say it started, I started feeling the pandemic in March. And that's when a lot of tour guides started to get on a PUA. I tried to hold on and I didn't sign up for PUA until early August.
So what did you do in those months to support yourself?
Well, first is your savings, because as a tour guide, you work the entire summer. And you basically live off the season. And then as your experience goes during the wintertime, if you're a good enough tour guide or concierge, you get jobs during the winter. So First thing that goes is your savings. The second thing you do is like what most people do is family help until you like shrink down all your resources and decide what your next move is going to be.
Wow. Now, you applied for unemployment in August. Have you received any unemployment?
I have not seen any unemployment since I applied. No.
Not a dime? Nothing?
Not a dime.
Did you get stimulus check?
I received the first stimulus check. I haven't received anything after that. They sent me an email, said, and when I pay taxes, that they will give me a credit for the $600 second stimulus check.
So how are you surviving?
Family help.
You moved in with your mom, family. Right? You're living with your mother now?
She's 78 years old. I had to move in with her, yes. 79 years old, she just told me.
Okay. That's moms for you, right?
Yeah.
If you don't mind, Brian, hold on, only because we got your name from Julia Simon Michelle. And Julia, I just want to get you back in on the conversation since you know Brian Owen certainly better than I do. You have been working with him. He has not received, I don't know how many months it is, but it's a good seven months. How common is this? What can the state, what can the feds do for Brian Owen?
Unfortunately, it's not as uncommon as it should be. Brian's situation is especially frustrating because he is someone who had clearly been connected to the labor market and whose type of work was shut down by COVID. He's right. The exact type of person who should be eligible for the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program as a freelancer, as he said, a subcontractor. But we have seen, I believe, some unnecessarily and not supported by the CARES Act, evaluations by the Department of Labor and Industry when it comes to people seeking these benefits, especially people like Brian who waited, trying to wait it out to see if their jobs were going to come back. People who applied later on have been kind of stuck in this process where their initial eligibility has never been determined. We've been trying to work to get Brian's benefits turned back on, but all the government wants is more paperwork and more paperwork and more paperwork, despite the fact that he's done everything within his power to provide it. And that's not what these benefits are intended to do. They're intended to be able to be quickly dispersed to address massive unemployment caused by a pandemic, and that's just not happening.
Brian, you said yes. You want to add to that?
Definitely. First, when I first entered the PUA, I got the email that said, you are qualified, you're getting this amount of money, I expect this and this and that. And then it went ghost for 4 months. I called the unemployment line, barely ever got through. Had to download what they call a redial app. Sat there for half an hour, 45 minutes. Finally get through for them to tell me that I need to get back on there, send them more paper, send them more identification, more records of my work. I pay taxes every year, so they wanted 2 years. First, they wanted 1 year of tax. I sent them one, then I decided to send 2 years of tax. It became frustrating, and I got in touch with Julia.
Well, I think you called the right place, having certainly interviewed Julia, knowing a bit about the work that she does. So, Brian, I'm hoping that will work out. Let me just ask you one more question before we say goodbye. As you said, you know, this is kind of summer employment. The vaccine is being rolled out. Hopefully, tourism will come back to Philadelphia.
I wouldn't call it summer employment. The tourism is year long, but make your most money during the summer.
Right. I understand. But I guess my question to you is just if tourists come back, will you be back there at the park?
I'll be back on the park if it wasn't any tourists out there.
Really?
Yeah.
It's your job, right? It's what you do.
For a tour guide, if you knew the life of a tour guide, one person, 30 people is no different.
Yeah. Well, look, I wish you the best, and I really appreciate you joining us. And I'm hoping to see you back on the mall there, Brian Owen.
You will.
That's great. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. Julie, anything you want to add? And any lies, I'll put it to you. And then we got a bunch of people that want to join us as well.
It's just heartbreaking. That's what people need to understand is that despite all these programs, we have so many people like Brian that aren't able to get benefits for one reason or another. And so they're really being left behind.
Yeah. Hardworking, enterprising, all of that. Eliza?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Julia. Sorry.
You know, I mean, it's fine. We're both strong females on here, and I love it.
I love strong females. Absolutely.
So, again, I wish that I could say that Brian's experience is unique, but it's not. And part of the problem, and this is specifically with the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, is, you know, it got rolled out without a lot of clear rules or boundaries by the federal government. There was, a bit of a free-for-all at the beginning for this program, especially when no one understood who was actually eligible for it. But there's been almost a whiplash from that, where it seems like people who didn't get in at the front end are now really struggling to get anything from this program, because all of a sudden the requirements that the government is trying to put on them are astronomically high and really impossible for a lot of people who were not W-2 workers to meet, because they just don't have access to the type of information that's being requested.
Julia, just a quick follow-up, and then I do want to get some more folks to join us. But do you think, we're still looking at what the Biden administration is going to do, but do you see anything in their $1.9 trillion stimulus package, anything that will help people like Brian Owen?
Well, you know, what will help people is that these benefit programs stick around, so that if they do get on them, they do get to, continue to access benefits once they're found eligible. I think we're also waiting for the first set of guidance from the new administration on these programs and how that guidance may affect the way states have been handling these benefits.
Eliza, anything you want to add to that?
No, I absolutely agree.
Let me get, we got a bunch of people on the line. Let's get Nicole on line 3 to join our conversation. And Nicole, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Do we have you, Nicole?
Yes.
I don't think it's a good. It
can you hear me?
Barely, but go ahead. Oh, it's not going to work. I'm sorry. That's a bad phone line. Let me read what she has to say. I'm an adjunct faculty member who has been unemployed since the summer. Full-time faculty members have been using my courses since there are fewer students. I assume I was ineligible for unemployment. Is this true? Can I toss that back to you, Julia, based on what we know about Nicole?
Certainly. So adjunct professors have a really difficult time with unemployment because of an issue in the unemployment law called reasonable assurance, which prevents benefits for a lot of educators over the summer time period. And so a lot of adjuncts were not eligible for benefits during the summer because of this. But if someone like the caller had been told by the school that she was going to get work in the fall or the spring and then was not given work or was given less work than she normally received, then absolutely she should be eligible for benefits and should be eligible for regular state unemployment compensation depending on how she was paid.
Eliza, I'm just curious about looking at the Great Recession of more than a decade ago, if there are lessons from that that can be applied to whatever we're calling, whatever it is that we're in, the pandemic recession, whatever we're in today, either lessons learned or not learned.
Right. I mean, yeah, I think one of the big lessons was that we didn't think big enough in terms of the stimulus and the public policy in the Great Recession. And that meant it took a really, really long time to recover and get people back to work. And so I do think that the Biden administration has learned that lesson in terms of it's better to go big. And that's why we have these programs that, you know, all of these extra unemployment insurance benefits that we have right now through the CARES Act. We didn't have any of that last time around. We just had an extension of how long people could receive benefits. So it's really a really different situation. And although there has been a lot of hiccups and a lot of issues with the rollout, at least we're reaching so many more people than we did during the Great Recession.
And my understanding is that they want $3 trillion for infrastructure jobs. Does that make sense to you, Eliza?
Ways that we can get more people back. It's a lot of money. Ways that we can get more people back to work and do these kinds of improvements that we really need. I think that could be a good thing.
And do we need to worry about debt and inflation, or is that something we can deal with? Hopefully, once we get back on more stable footing.
Right. So we have a lot of sort of early warning systems for understanding if it looks like inflation is getting out of control or something like that. And so I think that it's something that the Federal Reserve will keep their eyes on, and we can kind of make policy adjustments as we go forward, but we don't need to worry about it at this moment.
Let me get some callers back in on our conversation. Looks like we've got Kara on line one. And Kara, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
I had a couple questions about the 1099 Gs. I do know that the weekly $600 benefit was not eligible for income tax withholding, and that is largely what people are being taxed on. It just seems kind of like that is setting up people to fail come tax season. So I was wondering, like, what is the tax rate on those wages, and is there any plan to, remedy this tax balance for all of these people who are still on unemployment and have no way to pay taxes back to the government?
Kara, I'm going to put that to Julia Simon-Michelle. Julia?
Unfortunately, people are calling this the tax surprise of the season, which is that unemployment benefits, which include base unemployment, pandemic unemployment assistance, the extensions, and the $600, what was pandemic unemployment compensation, and now at $300, are all taxable by the federal government. And there are options in most states, including Pennsylvania, to select tax withholding from those benefits at the beginning of the process. But a lot of people don't, A, realize that they're actually taxable, and B, they can't afford the 10% that's taken out at the time for federal withholding. The question of how much they're actually going to be taxed on will depend on the rest of somebody's return. And their income for the year and any sort of credits that they might qualify for. So there's not a single tax rate on them, but they are withheld if you choose that at 10%. So for instance, the extra $600, if you had tax withholding selected for that, you lost over $1,000 this summer to federal withholding.
Eliza, we're almost out of time, but I'm thinking of people who are hiring. I guess Amazon is a good example of a company who's doing very well under the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do have some businesses that are really hiring, and as we have this sort of change in how people are consuming and living their lives right now.
Well, we're going to leave it there. My thanks to both of you ladies for joining us today on Radio Times. Eliza Forsythe, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Assistant professor at the University of Illinois in Economics, Labor, and Employment Relations. Julia Simon-Michel, thank you for joining us once again on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Supervising attorney at the Unemployment Compensation Unit at Philadelphia Legal Assistance. And my apologies that we couldn't get to all the comments and calls and questions that we had, but we appreciate hearing from you as always on Radio Times. If you want to download a podcast of the show, you can do it. There are lots of them there, and it's wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you for joining us.